Om Sahana Vavatu, Sahanao Bhunaktu, Sahavidyan Karavavahai, Tejasvinavadhitamastu Mavidvishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi. Chaitanyam sarvagam sarvam sarvaguhashukashayam yat sarva vishayatitam tasmai sarva vide namaha. Oh, good. Welcome back. Welcome to you all. And we continue our study of this wonderful text, Upadesha Sahasri, and we're going to see a really nice passage today. By the way, welcome also to all of our students watching online. We, at the end of the last class, we started a new topic, and I'll remind you of the kind of long Sanskrit word we use to describe the condition of utter contentment experienced by an enlightened person. That condition is called krita krityata. We introduced that in our previous class. Krita is done. Kritya is what needs to be done. Krita krityata is a state of a person for whom everything that needs to be done is done. It's like having a to-do list for your entire life. Think how long that to-do list would be. Imagine every item on that list simultaneously checked off. That's the experience of an enlightened person. That condition of utter contentment, nothing else needs to be done. And we have a series of verses that in which Shankaracharya continues to expand on that very important principle. Beforehand, there was a very alert student watching online who observed in the last class that I said Turiya was a state. I don't remember saying that, but if I did, I absolutely misspoke. Turiya, the fourth, is not a fourth state of consciousness. It is consciousness itself. I probably meant to say samadhi if I was talking about a state. And those interesting that those two words are very different. Samadhi and turiya, they're often conflated, mixed up with each other. There's a video on turiya on my YouTube channel if you want to get some more clarity about that. Okay, so having done that, we are ready to proceed. Next verse, this is verse 12.
Ashanadhyadyate krantam, brahmai vasmi nirantaram, Karyavan Syam Katam Chaham, Vimrshedeva Manjasa.
So here Shankara continues to describe the very nice. You get inside the mind of an enlightened person. That's what Shankara is giving us, that kind of access, how the mind of an enlightened person works. And he says, such a person, ashanayadi atikrantam, atikrantam, such a person has completely transcended ashanaya, which means hunger. But it's actually a reference to the very famous passage in the Brihad Aranyaka Upanishad, which Shankaracharya quotes many times here, and that adi, etc., is a key. When you see that adi in an expression, it often means it's a partial quotation. So in that Upanishad, the rishi includes, it says, not only beyond hunger, ashanaya, but also beyond pipasa, thirst, that makes sense, but more than that, beyond shokam, sorrow, sadness, suffering, beyond moham, delusion, confusion about life, jara, beyond old age, and mrityu, death. So it's a fairly complete description of the problems of life. So here, Shankara begins by saying the enlightened person is beyond these problems of life. Also, the enlightened person is one who knows Brahma eva asmi. I am Brahman. Nirantaram. There's not a shade of difference. There's no gap between me and Brahman. This is the perspective of the enlightened person. Now, these two statements, if you look at them together, it shows you how Shankara is taking this topic. We're talking about krita krityata, right? Contentment, utter contentment. So what is Shankara telling us here? In the first line, where he says that you are utterly free, the state of contentment is utterly beyond all worldly problems, meaning that there's no problem you have to get rid of. And then he goes on to say, Brahma eva asmi, I am Brahman, without a shade of difference, which means there's nothing that can be added. This is an important Vedantic teaching. There is nothing that you can, nothing, what would be the best language? You risk losing nothing. Nothing can be taken from you. That's a simpler expression. Nothing can be taken from you. Many of you know that famous mantra, Purnamadah, Purnamidam, Purnat. I'm not going to explain it right now. But that statement says you are full, utterly full, utterly full in the sense that nothing can make you less, nothing can make you more, both. And an example that's given in scripture quite often is that of an ocean. An ocean, don't tell me about global warming and of ocean levels rising. I know all of that, but Shankara didn't know about that. So set that aside. So from Shankara's perspective, the oceans, Shankara did know that an immense amount of water was evaporating from the oceans each day. That much he knew. And yet, the level of the oceans don't fall. Shankara most certainly knew that thousands of rivers are emptying their waters into the ocean, and the levels don't rise. So this is a frequently given metaphor in scripture, and that is, your true nature as pure consciousness is such that nothing can be taken from it, can't be reduced in any way by worldly problems. Worldly problems don't detract, nor can you add anything. How do you improve on fullness? How do you improve on a state of perfection? So that's what he says in the first two lines to illustrate the state of krita krityata, utter contentment. Then he says, with that perspective, karyavan syam katam aham. It's all in the first person. He says, katam, then how, aham, how would I, karyavan syam, how would I need to do anything? Karyavan. What do I need to do? If nothing needs to be, if there are no problems to address, and nothing can make the situation any better, then what needs to be done? Sometimes I've given this example of at the end of a long day, you're sitting in your favorite chair, sipping your cup of tea, and for a moment, at least a moment, you have a sense of contentment, right? There's nothing that needs to be done. How long does that moment last? Before long, you think of something you have to do. You finish your tea and you get up and do it. But you all experience that moment of utter contentment where you feel nothing needs to be done. Suppose it wasn't a moment. Suppose it was your, what do they call it, baseline. Sounds like medical talk. Anyway, this is the nature of the enlightened person. And then Shankara concludes here, vimrshet evam. You should reflect on this anjasa properly, correctly. And properly means all the time. You should reflect on this. We've seen Shankara's emphasis on nididhyasana, Vedanta contemplation. We're not going to discuss it right now, but that's what he's referring to. And that is, merely hearing these teachings is not enough. There is a contemplative practice that must accompany this process of listening to teachings, inquiring into these teachings. So that process, as we've discussed before, called nididhyasana, Vedanta contemplation. And that's what Shankara refers to very briefly here. Okay. And we won't discuss nididhyasana because our topic is kṛta kṛtyata, and that's what we continue talking about, that sense of utter contentment.
Paragas tu yata nadyas, paragas tu yata nadyas, tatsta param yayasati, tatsta param yayasasi, atmajñaścetatā kāryam, atmajñaścetatā kāryam, kartum hanyari hechati, kartum hanyari hechati.
In this verse and the next verse, Shankara is actually a little sarcastic, talking about someone who thinks he or she is enlightened, but not really. You know, there's this pretentiousness that arises in some people, people who have been engaged in spiritual pursuits for a long time. They can't imagine themselves to be enlightened. And that's what Shankara is addressing here, that kind of pretentiousness of imagining you're enlightened. He says, imagine a paragaha. By the way, the English is broken incorrectly here. Here, it should be paragas tu is the proper way to break it. Paragaha is one who's gone to the other side, nadyas, of the river. So, yata, just like tu. But just like someone who wanted to go to the other side of the river and tatstaha, and having stood there on the other side of the river, having decided, having wanted to go there, now param yayasasi yayasati. Now he wants to come back to the original shore. By the way, for our Sanskrit students, yayasati, nice desiderative. He has a desire to go. To go where? Param, back to the other shore. So originally he had a desire to go that way. Now he has a desire to go this way. Sounds pretty confused. He's confused about the goal. Obviously, he hasn't reached his goal because he continues to have desire. That's the basic principle. When you have reached the goal, in this case the goal of spiritual life, you become free from that desire. I've achieved it, nothing more is to be achieved. Here he is talking about someone who is not like that. Someone who's confused, who thought, oh, I want to go there, and then he changes his mind, no, I want to go back. And Shankara gives us kind of a sarcastic metaphor. Tata in the third line, middle. Tata in the same way. Chet, such is the nature of Atmajnaha. Notice I put the word knower in quotation marks. It's one who considers himself to be a Atmajnaha. Jnaha, a knower of Atma, one who considers himself or herself to be enlightened. One who wrongly considers himself to be enlightened. Such a person, karyam kartum anyat icchati. Such a person is like the fellow in the boat who wanted to go to this shore and then he wanted to come back. So Shankara is saying the person who wrongly considers himself to be enlightened, such a person, karyam kartum anyat, something else, icchati, he wants to do. He wants to do something else. So, I'm enlightened, now what? So, it's like, you remember that to-do list? Enlightenment is one item on that list. Tick it off, and now you still have 1,000 other items on your to-do list. Where's the contentment in that? So, enlightenment is the tick. What, on medical forms, they sometimes give you a little box, and if none of these applies, click tick here. Something like that. So on your to-do list, suppose there was one item called moksha, liberation, but it's an unusual item because when you tick off that item, all the other items simultaneously and automatically get ticked off your to-do list. So that's kind of the sense here. So someone who claims to be enlightened but still has an urge to do something. And that word urge is important. In our Bhagavad Gita classes, we've talked a lot about raga and dvesha, often incorrectly translated as likes and dislikes, but properly understood as raga as a compulsion to get what you want, to get what you feel that you lack. If you're content, how can you be lacking anything? And dvesha, a desire to get away from something that you have and you don't want. Lives are dictated by these two compulsions. The compulsion to get what you want, the compulsion to get away from what you don't want. So if this person, believing himself or herself to be enlightened, if their mind is still driven by these compulsions, raga and dvesha, what kind of enlightenment is that? A very simple indicator of enlightenment. Some people ask Swamiji, when do I know for sure that I'm enlightened? Obviously, if you ask that question, but if you want an indicator, if you are still compelled by raga dvesha to get what you want, to get away from what you don't want, then you're not quite there yet. Okay, that's the idea here. Now, by the way, Shankara gets even more sarcastic in the next verse. Interesting to kind of try to imagine the personality of these great teachers. So we don't really know much about them. But by looking at the language they use, you get some insight into their personality. And the last line here, you'll see something that might shock. Let's see this next verse. Atmajnas yapi yasya syat.
Dhanopadanatha yadi. namoksharha savigneyaha, samoksharha savigneyaha, vanto sau brahmana dhruvam, vanto sau brahmana dhruvam. Atmagnya, again in quotation marks, the one who considers oneself to be enlightened, yasya atmagnyasya, for such a person, for a person who considers oneself to be enlightened, suppose, yadi, suppose there is, by the way, that dana is actually hana. You see the prior da of syat. Anyway, lots of Sunday rules, grammar rules. Hana means getting rid of something. Upadana, you have to break all these words apart, means getting something. Hana and upadana, getting rid of something or getting something. He says, suppose this person who considers himself or herself to be enlightened, suppose they continue to have this condition of hana upadanata. They continue to want to get things, and get away things means they continue to be driven by these compulsions called raga and dvesha. So if they continue to be compelled by raga dvesha, na moksharha. Obviously they're not enlightened, but that's not what Shankara says here. Such a person is na moksha arhaha, not capable of enlightenment. Why are they not capable of enlightenment? You can figure it out, right? I'm already enlightened, so why do I need to meditate? Why do I need to pray? Why do I need to continue any kind of spiritual study or any kind of spiritual practice? That's the person Shankara is talking about. With that pretentiousness, they're, what are they, holier than thou, or more enlightened than thou. And such a person is not only not enlightened, but it's not likely that they will become enlightened because of this wrong conclusion that they have, this pretension that they have. So he or she may consider himself enlightened, but other people, saha vigneyaha, Shankara is now talking about how other people see such a person. Other people, saha vigneyaha, he is understood by other people, he is considered by other people to be vantaha asau. He is vantaha, rejected. And I'll give you another definition in just a moment. He is vantaha, he is rejected, brahmana, by Brahman, by reality, by truth. Not that Brahman rejects anyone or anything, but it's a figure of speech. He has missed the mark completely, dhruvam. Certainly, he has missed the mark completely. Now, vantaha brahmana, rejected by Brahman, there's a little sarcasm, more than a little sarcasm here. Vantaha can mean rejected. Vanta is also the commonly used word for what you vomit. Like when a dog vomits something onto the ground. Vanta. That's, Shankara is calling that person Vantaha, one of the most lowly objects we can think about. So this brahmana vantaha on one level means rejected by Brahman. On another level, he is like vomit. So this is a sarcasm that Shankara uses here, specifically to refer to this pretension. Notice Shankara would never use this language for an ignorant person, someone who says, I don't know Brahman. In fact, when you say, I don't know Brahman, that's the first step to enlightenment. You admit your ignorance, And then you approach a teacher. I don't know Brahman, please teach me. That's the absence of pretentiousness. Shankara would never use such language with regard to that kind of person. But for this pretentious person who says, I'm enlightened, vāntaha asau, very sarcastic. Then, continuing to talk about the state of kṛta-kṛtyatā, utter contentment and fulfillment. Sādityam hi jagat prānas, sādityam hi jagat prānas, tasman nahar nishaivava, tasman nahar nishaivava, pranagyasyapi nasyatam, pranagyasyapi nasyatam, kuto brahma vido dvaye, kuto brahma vido dvaye. Let me introduce the teaching here. There are lots of scriptural traditions, I should say commentarial traditions, that try to interpret things differently than Shankaracharya. So Shankaracharya, whom is our primary guide in these teachings, not everyone agrees with him. There was one teacher who came a contemporary of Shankaracharya, was named Mandana Mishra. Some people think that he's the prior Sureshwaracharya, we don't know, but we'll just call him Mandana Mishra, was a contemporary teacher of Shankaracharya, who, who had some significant differences from Shankara in his teachings. And Mandana Mishra was a karma mimamsaka. He was devoted to the ritualistic portion of the Vedas. He was very focused on the performance of rituals. So Mandana Mishra felt very strongly that even after you're enlightened, you still should continue doing these rituals. Because he embraced the concept called pratyavaya dosha. This is, in English, we call it sin of omission. These are rituals that you're supposed to do. If you are a pious Hindu, you have to do these rituals. And just because you're enlightened, you don't get an excuse. What is it? A pass on doing these rituals. You're required to do these rituals. So this Mandana Mishra had this orientation. Now, Mandana, in this verse, Shankara is speaking about one particular ritual in which in Shankara's time, already Vedic rituals were done less in Shankara's time, but one, what they call it, smarta ritual, one other kind of ritual, not a Vedic ritual, but a post-Vedic ritual that you were supposed to do was sandhya vandanam. Some of you have heard of this particular ritual. It's a ritual, in fact, it's a ritual associated with the Gayatri Mantra. It's a ritual you do every morning and evening. There are offerings of water unto the sun, and there is recitation of the Gayatri Mantra. This ritual is supposed to be done every morning and evening. And if Mandana Mishra were standing here, he'd say, yeah, you better do your they abbreviated sandhya. You better do your sandhya. If you don't do your sandhya, you are lapsing in your duties as a pious Hindu, even if you're enlightened. Shankara won't put up with that kind of perspective at all. And he gives a brilliant analysis of why, for an enlightened person, a ritual like Sandhya Vandanam is not required. So Shankara says, Sadityam hi jagat pranas. Now, it's a little obscure. Here, prana usually means life force, but there is a Vedantic teaching that says your individual prana is from an vyashti. It's an individual standpoint, vyashti. Suppose you consider prana from a samashti perspective. Samashti prana is and if you don't follow this, it's okay. This is just some technical Vedantic stuff, some lingo using Advaita Vedanta that says that the collective prana, the prana of all living beings taken collectively, is an aspect of Ishvara, the God of the cosmos, an aspect of Ishvara known as Hiranyagarbha. You might have seen that word, a little intimidating. What is Hiranyagarbha? And then translators would do something, they'll translate it literally. The golden womb. What in the world is a golden womb? It's not. The words mean Hiranyagarbha, but Hiranyagarbha is not a golden womb. Hiranyagarbha is an aspect of Ishvara, the God of the cosmos, an aspect from the standpoint of the life force that fills the universe and enlivens every living being. So Hiranyagarbha is that life force that pervades the universe, giving life to every sentient being. Hiranyagarbha in Vedanta can be called prana. That's the tricky part here. So, and that's why, that, by the way, that's one reason these texts usually aren't studied without a commentary or without a teacher, because you won't figure that out. The commentator makes it very clear. So if you're reading with a Sanskrit commentary, by the way, such commentaries aren't translated. The commentary of Ramatirtha, which is the main commentary on this text, Upadesha Sahasri, no one's bothered to translate it. And the reason no one's bothered to translate it is they figure if you're ready for such a commentary, you already know Sanskrit. So they just figure there's no one would care to read a translation, which is probably a bad assumption. I think some of you might value a translation like that. Anyway, many advanced commentaries and sub-commentaries have not been translated. They just assume that you'll know Sanskrit. Anyway, enough of that. So now with that introduction, we're ready to understand what Shankara is saying here. Not little sarcasm, but not so intense as in the prior verses. He says, pranaha, Ishvara in the form of Ishvara as Hiranyagarbha, as the all-pervasive life force, that Ishvara includes is Sadityam, Saha Adityam, includes the sun, Jagati, and includes the earth. Hiranyagarbha encompasses the sun and earth, meaning the sun and earth are non-separate from Hiranyagarbha, non-separate from Ishvara. From Ishvara's standpoint, there is no sun or earth, there's only Ishvara. That's the point. From Ishvara's standpoint, there is no sun, there is no earth, there is only Ishvara. Tasmat, in the second line. Tasmat na ahar nisha evava. So we have to break apart the words. So if there is no sun or earth, Tasmat, and again, words change due to grammar. Tasmat, therefore, na ahaha ahar, it comes here. There is no day, nisha eva, or night. There is no day, if there's no, think about it, if there's no sun or earth, how could there be day or night? So for Ishvara, there's no sun or earth, therefore for Ishvara, there's no day or night. And then Shankara concludes, therefore, pranajnasya api, for one who knows prana. And prana means Hiranyagarbha. Hiranyagarbha means Ishvara, God. For one who knows God, and notice that knower is not in quotation marks here. It's one who genuinely knows, one who is genuinely enlightened. For one who is enlightened, nasyatam, day and night could not exist for one who knows Ishvara to be the one reality, including sun and earth. And yes, this is a little obscure. The message is not so obscure, though. If there is, from the perspective of Ishvara, there's no sun or earth. From the perspective of an enlightened person who knows Ishvara, there's no sun or earth. If there's no sun or earth, there's no morning or night. When are you supposed to do Sandhya Vandanam? Every morning and evening. So if there's no morning and evening, how can you do this ritual? This is Shankara's response to the ritualist. The ritualist says, you have to do this, and he's wagging his finger at you. But Shankara says, no. He says, kutaha, how could there be? Brahma vidaha, for one who is enlightened. Advaye, established in non-duality. For an enlightened person who is established in non-duality, how can there be morning and night? Therefore, how could there be a requirement to do these rituals? Now, bear in mind, this is probably not a big deal today. We live in a very non-ritualistic time today. But in Shankara's time, these rituals were a big deal. And the message of Mandana Mishra was a powerful message in Shankara's time. These rituals have to be done, even by an enlightened person. So that was a strong perspective in Shankara's time. So Shankara refutes that here. Today it may not be so crucial, but it reinforces Shankara's teaching here about the condition of being krita krityata. Nothing remains to be done. For an enlightened person, nothing remains to be done, including rituals. I think we'll see just one more verse today.
Nasmaratyatmano hyatma, nasmaratyatmano hyatma, vismaret vapyaluptachat, vismaret vaptaluptachat, manopi smarati tyetat, manopi smarati tyetaj, jnanam ajnana hetujam, jnanam ajnana hetujam. End of the third line. If you break the words, it is a tat, is the last word in the third line. Okay, this verse also needs some explanation. In fact, we're back to Mandana Mishra, who had another doctrine he taught that Shankaracharya didn't agree with. So these were contemporary teachers. Mandana Mishra is famous for a work called Brahma Siddhi. Brahma Siddhi is a famous Vedantic work, but it is not
not consistent with the teachings of Shankaracharya. And if you're wondering, well, what is the big deal? Why don't we also study this Brahma City? Why don't we also study Shankaracharya's teachings? I'm sorry, why don't we also study Mandana Mishra's teachings 1,200 years after the fact? So Mandana Mishra and Shankaracharya lived about 1,200 years ago. And in those succeeding 1,200 years, there has been so much Vedantic teaching that has refuted Mandana Mishra's position and supported Shankaracharya's teachings, which means no one follows Mandana Mishra anymore. Maybe back then, not maybe, back then in Shankara's time, absolutely Mandana Mishra had his followers. But over the centuries, Mandana Mishra's teachings have faded away. Shankara's teachings have remained firm because of their content. So Mandana Mishra's teachings contain several defects which were refuted by Shankara and later generations. So we're going to see another example of a defect in Mandana Mishra's teachings. Something else that you have to do, a little tricky. So Krita Krityata is our topic here, a state of complete contentment after gaining enlightenment. Mandana Mishra says, no, you're not quite done yet. That is, after you understand the Mahavakya, earlier Shankara said, Brahma asmi eva, I am Brahman. Mahavakya says, tat tvam asi, you are that. So Mandana Mishra felt very strongly that this Mahavakya was not enough to make you enlightened. Now, you have to understand this. Yes, this is a little technical, but it's quite important, and you can get the idea of it quite easily. The Mahavakya is the central teaching that reveals to you that your consciousness, which you think is something quite ordinary, your consciousness is in fact extraordinary. The consciousness that's present in your experience right now is the very fabric of existence. That's what the Mahavakya means. Tvam, the consciousness present in your experience right now, is not ordinary by any means. It is identical to Brahman, the ground of reality. That is the highest truth, the highest realization that is conveyed through the Mahavakya. And how the Mahavakya conveys that wisdom to you, how the Mahavakya makes you realize the truth of yourself, is such an important topic. There are many scriptures written on. In fact, Shankara himself wrote a text called Vakyavritti, an explanation of how the Mahavakya makes you enlightened. And then he wrote Laghu Vakyavritti, a shorter version of that same text. Other great scholars over the centuries have written many, many works that describe how the teachings of Vedanta in general and the Mahavakya Tattvamasi in particular have the capacity to lead you to recognize your true nature as Satchidananda Atma, as Aham Brahma Asmi, to have that recognition. Now, this is not the time and place. That's a whole text in itself. So obviously, we can't discuss the details of it, but Mandana Mishra had a very different perspective. That's what we want to address here. Mandana Mishra said, no, it doesn't have that power at all. The great statements of the rishis are inadequate for gaining enlightenment. He said, you have to meditate on those statements. For those of you who have studied a lot of Vedanta, you may have heard something called prasankhyana vada. Prasankhyana means repetition. And prasankhyana vada was taught by Mandana Mishra, and it refers to ongoing meditation, repeated meditation on, for example, tattvamasi, 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 or better yet, aham brahmasmi, I am Brahman, aham brahmasmi, aham brahmasmi. So the teachings of the rishis aren't enough. You have to go on meditating, aham brahmasmi, aham brahmasmi, aham brahmasmi. And if you don't do that meditation, you are missing out. You will not be enlightened. Now, again, for those of you who have studied a lot of Vedanta, this may sound a little similar to nididhyasana, but it's not. Don't confuse prasankhyana with nididhyasana. Nididhyasana is Vedantic contemplation that is done for the sake of removing viparita bhavana, habitual wrong identification. Again, huge topics that we can't get into here, but just for those of you who understand what is prasankhyana and nididhyasana, understand they're two completely different things. Just mentioning that, if that doesn't make sense to you, you don't need to know that to understand Shankara's point here. Shankara's point here is to refute Mandana Mishra's contention that just using the powerful teachings of the rishis found in the Upanishads, teachings like Tattvamasi or Brahmas, Aham Brahmasmi, those teachings are not sufficient. You have to go on meditating on them. Again and again, aham brahmasmi, aham brahmasmi. It's as though, in fact, not as though, it's like you have to get that stuck in your mind, aham brahmasmi, aham brahmasmi. Or, then to prepare you for Shankara's verse here, you have to remember all the time, aham brahmasmi, aham brahmasmi. You have to go on aham brahmasmi 24, not 24/7, but whenever you're awake, aham brahmasmi, aham brahmasmi. Because if you forget that you are Brahman, what do you say? Fat ho gaya. Your enlightenment goes away. Whatever you do, don't forget. Aham brahmasmi, aham brahmasmi, aham brahmasmi. Don't forget. Don't lose. Don't forget. So that's what Shankara says here. He says here, na smarati atmanah hi atma. Vismaretva, we have to, the continues on the second line. He says, Atmanaha, for Atma, Atmana smarati, Atma is not remembered, na vismaret Atma, nor is Atma forgotten. He says, for Atma, Atma is not remembered or forgotten. And this is very powerful Vedantic teachings. Shankara expresses it very, very tersely, but we can get it clearly. What he is saying is enlightenment means knowing that you are this pure consciousness, Atma, Satchitananda Atma. That firm knowledge is enlightenment. And the point here is that something that needs to be remembered in your mind? And I'll give you an example you may have heard me give before. When you wake up in the morning, do you have to remember who you are? That's interesting to reflect on that. You know, who am I? What am I supposed to do? And then you go to the mirror. Ah! now I remember. That's silly, right? You know who you are. It's nothing you can remember, and it's nothing you can forget. That's what Shankara's point here is that Atma nasmaret. It's not something that you have to remember. Nafismaret. Nor is it something you can forget. Why? Because Atma, you are breaking the words apart in the second line, va api alupta-chit. Api. Because of the nature of Atma as alupta-chit. Uninterrupted consciousness. Unchanging consciousness. When you discover that you are that unchanging consciousness, that consciousness doesn't come and go, that consciousness is always present as your true nature, it's not something you need to remember, nor is it something you can forget. So therefore, here he now Shankara comes right out and criticizes Mandana Mishra, not by name, obviously, but commentators will often point all of this out. So indirectly, he is criticizing Mandana Mishra by saying, Manaha api smarati iti etat jnanam. Etat jnanam. This, by the way, jnanam here means concept. Idea. Be ready for words to have different meanings and different concepts, different contexts. So here, jnanam doesn't mean knowledge. Here, jnanam means an idea, a concept. So, etat jnanam, this idea, what is the idea? Third line, manaha api smarati. Your mind should continually remember. Manaha api smarati iti. That the mind should remember you when you wake up, the first thing you have to remind yourself is aham brahmasmi. Remind yourself. Every morning, aham brahmasmi. Tomorrow morning, aham brahmasmi. And throughout the day, because you might forget. Then what? Fatokaya. Anyway, sorry for the Hindi. Anyway, not that I'm a great expert in Hindi, but fat ho gaya would mean it gets ruined, it gets destroyed, goes away. Anyway, okay. He says if you stop reminding yourself, aham brahmasmi, this idea. So Shankara says, etat jnanam, this idea that you have to remind yourself continually, is ajnana hetujam. The final words here. It is ajnana hetujam. It is born from the hetu, the cause, which is ajnana. It is due to ignorance. This famous teaching of Mandana Mishra, called Prasankhyanavada, Shankara says it is ajnana hetucham. This particular teaching is based on ignorance. If you're really enlightened, you don't need to remind yourself. You don't. Waking up in the morning, aham brahmasmi, utterly unnecessary. When you know who you are, is complete. And just to relate it now to our topic, the topic being krita krityata, Mandana Mishra would say you have to go on reminding yourself, meditating on aham brahmasmi. Shankara says you don't even need to do that. You don't need to remind yourself. You don't have to wake up and contemplate aham brahmasmi. There's nothing that needs to be done. Krita krityata. yata. Okay, with that we'll conclude our class. Om sarve bhavantu sukhinah, sarve santu niramayah, sarve bhadrani pashyantu, ma kashchid dukha bhag bhavet, asato ma sadgamaya, tamaso ma jyotirgamaya, mrityorma hamratangamaya. Om shanti shanti shanti. Om tat sat. We're good. We'll take